Hello, I'm Lynn Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. As the world continues to battle the COVID-19 pandemic, experts say the outbreak has demonstrated now more than ever the vital role of technology in healthcare. On the show today, we speak to the founder of a startup company that focuses on vaccination services. Vaxi Global is a health tech startup focused on promoting health security through immunization verification. The service uses contactless biometrics to verify delivery of vaccines. I spoke with Dr. Integrity Mchechesi, a public healthcare innovator and co-founder of Vaxi Global. Take a listen.
Dr. Integrity Mchechesi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You are co-founder of Vaxi Global, a health tech startup. Would you please tell us a little more about that? What does it consist of?
So what we are trying to do is to improve, we are verifying vaccine delivery to improve the data quality and to make sure that a distributed vaccine has reached its intended beneficiary. So we do this by linking the individual's vaccination record to their biometrics, which can be the facial biometrics or their fingerprints. So what this means is we have a more accurate records of the vaccination, and we minimize vaccine wastage and prevent fraud and vaccine wastage.
Why was it important for you to focus on vaccination?
So as you probably know, that 58% of all vaccine preventable diseases in the world are in sub-Saharan Africa. So which means we are still struggling with infectious diseases, which can be prevented by vaccinations. So we thought this is, vaccine, a low-cost, high-impact innovation that have helped many African countries over, so many years. So we felt like this is an area where technology can be used to improve the impact that vaccines already have. And knowing also that in sub-Saharan Africa, most of the vaccines that we are using are donated, there is also that room for, the people who are donating the vaccines, they want to make sure that the vaccines are reaching the intended beneficiaries. And so we thought this is an area where technology can actually be used to have like high impact in preventing, vaccine preventable diseases.
Now you are working in the vaccine field, and right now the COVID-19 pandemic has been ongoing. Vaccine is a big topic. Talk to us about first how the pandemic has impacted your work. How do you come in with regards to COVID-19?
Yeah, thank you so much for that. So when we started Vaxi Global, we were really focusing mostly on yellow fever vaccine, verifying that people who have those yellow fever cards have actually been vaccinated for sure. And then COVID-19 came. So we had to pivot to focus on COVID-19. So the first thing that we did was using the system that we had initially to also verify the COVID-19 tests to make sure that, travelers who have the COVID-19 tests for traveling really have like authentic results which are not counterfeited. Then with the rolling out of the COVID-19 vaccine also, we are using our system also to verify delivery of the COVID-19 vaccinations. So this is very critical, especially because there's already a shortage of COVID-19 vaccines, as you probably know, in this part of the world, in sub-Saharan Africa. So when there's a shortage of vaccines, it's critical that we minimize the wastage of that vaccine and also that we can try to combat any fraud and counterfeiting that might be taking place in the market. So this is the work that we are doing. We're still at an early stage of trying to implement this right now because everyone is focusing on the acquisition of the vaccines. So we are like on the high end, like on the delivery aspect of the vaccine. So we are still trying to find our place in that area. But we believe that our work is critical to make sure that we don't waste any vaccines and that we make sure that all the donated vaccines have reached their intended beneficiaries.
Is it an app that you guys have and you scan the card? How does this work really?
Okay, so the way it works is the health worker is equipped with a mobile application that works offline, which is very critical because there are many areas where there's poor internet connectivity. So the health worker uses the mobile application to create a vaccination record. Then they use a camera-based like a facial recognition tool where they can capture the beneficiary's biometrics, and then they link that vaccination record to the beneficiary's biometrics. So once the internet is available, or that vaccination record, which is linked to the beneficiary's biometrics, is uploaded to the cloud. And the verifiers, we mean the health workers, when the beneficiary comes for the second dose, or maybe it's for traveling purposes, the verifiers can then scan the patient's face using like that app, and they pull the digital vaccination record from the cloud. So by doing this, we make sure that we're pulling the exact accurate record of that that beneficiary. And you know, by doing this also, we can account for every vaccine dose that has been given, because we know that if someone says this dose has been given and there's a beneficiary's biometrics linked to that record, then we are confident that the vaccine has reached its intended beneficiary.
Now, you are a medical doctor. What prompted you to make that transition from medicine to health tech?
Initially, before I got into medicine, I was studying electronics and computer engineering at Hofstra University in New York. Then I decided to come back to study medicine. When I was like in my fourth year of medical school, I found an intersection between the two, where during my community medicine attachment, I could see some gaps in the healthcare delivery system. You know, with my background of tech, I could instantly know that this is an area where technology can actually come in handy to solve this problem. So that's why I then started. Initially, I was in the maternal health space, and this is where I actually got to know also about the problems in the vaccination space for the children and babies, and that's how Vaccine Global eventually came about. So it's really been an exciting journey seeing how technology and healthcare can really merge and solve some of the pressing challenges that the healthcare systems are facing right now.
As we know, one of the challenges with many countries is the healthcare system. To your opinion, what impact can technology have in strengthening African health system? How do you see that dynamic?
Tech can be very useful at many levels. As you know, there's huge shortage of human resources. Telehealth and telemedicine can really be leveraged to bridge that gap where there's shortage of like doctors and specialists. Then also beyond that, counterfeiting of medication. And this is something that technology can be used also to make sure that we combat the counterfeiting. And also artificial intelligence can also come in handy where there is shortage of healthcare workers, and also really to leverage, especially the opportunities that telehealth is open right now. We can then use artificial intelligence also to leverage the huge amounts of data that we are getting from the digital health opportunities that have opened up. So I'm really excited about the opportunities, again, that COVID-19 has opened up, especially in the digital health adoption rates. I mean, we're seeing many countries adopting digital health from the ministry level down to the hospital and even to the individual practitioner level. So this is going to lower down the cost and also increase the access to quality healthcare.
You are a Halcyon Fellow. Talk to us about that experience. How did it come about? And what are some of the resources that you are able to utilize from that fellowship?
Oh, so the Halcyon Fellowship has been an incredible experience. In fact, when we applied for it, I think in 2020, initially we couldn't make it. Then COVID happened and somehow our solution also got some traction. And we reapplied and we got admitted. And it was an incredible journey, very competitive. As you know, they choose like 8 ventures only out of like, I don't know, many hundreds of applicants. And it is a holistic fellowship. They were not just focusing on the business, but also it was sort of like a leadership fellowship as well. And it was incredible because when we wanted to scale up and we were about to want to be investor ready and wanted those connections. As you know, scaling our business involves working in many different countries, and they came in handy with all the good connections that they gave us, and also the business coaching, and also being investor ready, and also the access to AWS architects, who really helped us to refine our solution as well on the tech side. And we also got access to the Deloitte consultants, who helped us with our pricing structure, also with the partnership development. And it was really a whole package that really scaled us up and made us to be investor ready. And we have forged some incredible partnerships from that.
Fantastic. And any final words before we wrap? Maybe with the perspective of COVID, which is here to stay, according to reports and what we're saying, what can you tell us about the future of Vaxi Global?
All right, thank you so much. So right now, one of the other things that we've managed to do is to, when I was referring to biometrics, we have partnered with an organization called Simprints from UK, and we've partnered also with the WHO Afro. So what we're trying to do is, right now we are using COVID-19 to pilot our solution, and we hope that by the end of the year we would have enrolled about 1 million beneficiaries. But then beyond COVID-19, we feel like this is an opportunity to strengthen our healthcare systems and transition also to use such systems and integrate the essential immunization schedules of different countries in sub-Saharan Africa. We are happy to help in the fight against COVID-19, but also we're excited about all the opportunities beyond COVID-19.
Integrity Mchichesi, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
That was Dr. Integrity Mchichesi, co-founder of Vaxi Global. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says shipments of coronavirus vaccine to Africa are picking up while the continent continues to grapple with an upsurge in COVID-19 infections. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
After a slight dip in cases last week, the third wave of COVID-19 has come roaring back, with infections rising by nearly 19% to more than 278,000 new cases this week. Also this week, the World Health Organization says COVID-19 deaths have reached a record peak of more than 6,400, bringing the total number of coronavirus fatalities on the continent to more than 172,000. Amid the bad news is the positive prospect of scaled-up vaccine shipments to Africa. Fiona Atuhebwe is new Vaccines Introduction Officer at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. She says there has been a 12-fold increase in vaccine deliveries in the last 2 weeks of July compared with the first half of the month, bringing the total number of doses shipped to Africa so far to 91 million.
We need to be clear, though. In a continent of over 1.3 billion people, this is just a tiny drop in a very large ocean. And in the face of a surging third wave and more contagious variants, vaccine shortages leave Africa dangerously exposed. We have a very long way to go. With less than 2% of Africans fully vaccinated, we cannot get vaccines fast enough into the arms of the people.
Atuhebwe says the vaccines arriving from the United States and European Union are expected to continue, and shipments from Britain will start soon. She says around 110 million doses are expected to be delivered to African countries through the COVAX facility and the African Union by the end of September.
Beyond September, as commitments by COVAX and the African Union and bilateral deals come through, we hope to meet the target of vaccinating 30% of Africans by the end of this year. But we also need up to 250 million more doses to complement the COVAX and African Union doses to meet this goal.
Atuhebwe says it would be a dream to have vaccines manufactured on the continent. She says several countries, notably Senegal, South Africa, Morocco, and Egypt, have the capacity to make it, but not from scratch. For that to become a reality, she says the technology for producing COVID-19 vaccine must be transferred to African countries. She says a waiver also is needed on trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, known as TRIPS. That would temporarily allow African countries to manufacture vaccines for underserved populations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now to Malawi. The country has received its first consignment of Johnson & Johnson vaccines, a donation made by the United States under COVAX, a campaign to provide equitable access to COVID-19 shots worldwide. Lamek Masina reports from Brentire.
Malawi expects to receive more than 600,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccine soon in May. The country had to discard 20,000 doses due to a lack of demand, but officials say that when the new vaccine arrives, demand will be high and Malawi will be prepared, as Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre. Over the next 2 months, Malawi is expected to receive about 372,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine and about 300,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Experts are warning the country needs to be ready to store and distribute it. In May, authorities banned about 20,000 expired doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine that went unused due to a shortage of distribution centers and widespread vaccine hesitancy, the latter caused by myths and misinformation about their safety. Queen Duwe is the chief of health services in Malawi's Ministry of Health. She says there will be no repeat of that incident because a government campaign has now convinced Malawians the vaccines are safe and protected. She notes that a recent consignment of 192,000 AstraZeneca vaccines, which the country received last Saturday, were gone within days. Even if some of the donated vaccines are due to expire soon, they will be distributed within sufficient time, she says.
It's these scenarios where you have 1 week shelf life left that then puts you in very difficult circumstances. But, you know, so we've created the demand. Remember on the 27th, we vaccinated 75,000 people. And so even if we had all those doses that were to expire within 2 weeks, say, for example, 100,000 doses, we should be able to quickly use them within 2 or 3 days.
Dr. Alinafe Garcia is a public health expert with Village Reach, an international health charity that is supporting vaccine delivery in African countries. He says countries need to think about their storage and distribution systems.
That means a number of things. Do we have enough capacity to be able to store the vaccines that are coming? I mean, some of these vaccines, you know, might have different cold chain requirements, but also do we have a logistics system in place to be able to move these vaccines around? Do we have enough people trained? Are we opening up enough sites? Are we looking at, you know, doing more to create demand?
Garcia, the country director for Village Reach in Malawi, applauds Malawi's government for creating demand for the vaccine. Queen Duwe says even though the Pfizer vaccine needs at record storage, no doses will be wasted.
So there are two things with Pfizer. So we now have evidence that if you take it out of the at-record system, you can store it at temperatures between 2 to 8 degrees. These are the normal temperatures that we store our normal vaccines in, and you can use it for 31 days.
So far, Malawi has recorded about 51,000 cases of COVID-19 and nearly 1,600 deaths. Only a tiny fraction of the country's 18 million people have been inoculated, though that number will quickly rise if more people cooperate with the government's vaccination campaign. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
As new and more potent coronavirus variants emerge and reports show some vaccines declining in efficacy, countries, mostly in the developed world, are getting ready to provide booster shots. But many health experts say they are not needed, at least yet. And the World Health Organization says available vaccines should go first to the unvaccinated in less developed countries. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo looks into it.
After many pleas to make more vaccines available to low and middle income countries, the World Health Organization this week called for a moratorium on wealthy countries giving their citizens COVID-19 booster shots.
We cannot and we should not accept countries that have already used most of the global supply of vaccines, using even more of it, while the world's most vulnerable people remain unprotected.
On Wednesday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the U.S. is doing its part, but also wants to be prepared in case the boosters are needed down the road.
I feel that it's a false choice and that we can do both. We announced just yesterday that we hit an important milestone of over 110 million vaccines donated to the world. That is more than any other country has shared combined. And we also started to donate the 500 million doses of Pfizer we've purchased.
China also this week pledged to supply 2 billion vaccine doses to other countries this year, promising to donate $100 million to COVAX, the program that aims to distribute vaccines to low and middle income countries. This comes after Israel became the first country to start offering a third Pfizer COVID-19 shot to older citizens a week ago. Other countries, including Germany and Britain, say they will start administering booster shots in September. Health experts weigh in.
I believe the World Health Organization's moratorium is to try to reduce the implications of, desperation for a booster shot in the U.S. or in Europe on overall worldwide vaccine supply. And I think it's a very important effort to really establish equity.
Well, obviously, we have many people around the world who still haven't gotten their first shots. And I think that's where most of our attention should be directed at the present time, before we start boosting other people's protection.
I think what we need to do is keep reminding everybody here that it's not one pandemic in the US and another pandemic in Africa. This is a global pandemic. The boosters are becoming necessary partially because of the duration of immunity, which means we're not vaccinating people around the world fast enough to reduce the risk of infections. And secondly, because of new variants that are emerging, what we need to do is keep reminding everybody here that it's not one pandemic in the US and another pandemic in Africa. This is a global pandemic. The boosters are becoming necessary partially because of the duration of immunity, which means we're not vaccinating people around the world fast enough to reduce the risk of infections. And secondly, because of new variants that are emerging.
Last month, Pfizer put in a request to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to authorize the booster dose of its COVID-19 vaccine as soon as possible. That was based on evidence that showed an erosion on the vaccine's efficacy after 6 months, as well as reduced efficacy against the highly contagious Delta variant.
I think it's important to remember that waning is a downward slope, but that doesn't mean that it goes from 95%, where Pfizer, which I know is the first company to come out and suggest a booster, 95% efficacy against the Alpha variant, and even sustained efficacy against the Delta variant and other variants, that going down doesn't mean that you are no longer protected.
Schaffner says he's happy to have boosters approved for use on the shelf, ready to go if needed, but it doesn't look like that's the case quite yet.
Well, the Delta variant now accounts for over 90% of new infections in the United States. And although we have had an upsurge of hospitalizations, they're almost all in unvaccinated persons. So that means that the vaccines are really working against Delta. They're keeping vaccinated people out of the hospital. And that, of course, was the principal goal of the vaccines.
And it's important to differentiate between immediate needs versus intermediate and long-term needs, Udayakumar says.
In the long term, we know that we have to ramp up significantly vaccine manufacturing capacity, and a lot of investments have happened. We're now starting to see investments in low and middle income countries, including in India, in South Africa, in Senegal.
On Thursday, Moderna said its vaccine continues to be 93% effective 6 months after the second dose. The company also said it believes a booster shot will be necessary before winter. Meanwhile, boosters could play a role for a particular group, Schaffner notes.
One of the groups that we're concerned about here in the United States, and I think also in Europe and around the world, are people who are immune compromised. You know, their immune system didn't respond as well to the vaccines because they are immune impaired. And the question is, could those people benefit from a third dose? And that might well be. You might even think of it not so much as a booster, but actually a three-dose initial series.
Questioned by VOA, the White House said Friday the administration's scientists are also considering whether to recommend a booster for immune-compromised individuals. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The Delta variant strain of COVID-19 is taking a toll on young people in Zimbabwe, and observers cite complacent behavior as a possible reason for its devastating effect. Adi Gondo gives us more on the story.
The Minister of Health and Child Care has revealed that the Delta variant is accounting for 79% of infections in the country. And medical experts say the popular PCR COVID-19 nasal swab test is not adequate to detect it. They say the virus is particularly insidious because it goes straight to the lungs, registering few symptoms along its disastrous wake. Still, observers say socioeconomic factors also have a bearing in the rate of infections, with citizens in a mostly informalized economy without safety nets selling and buying goods. Authorities say many young people spend an inordinate amount of time on social media dodging vaccination while pandering to conspiracy theories. In the city of Bulawayo, for instance, authorities revealed this past week that a quarter of the deaths in the city are between the ages of 20 and 40. The former health minister, Henry Madzorera, says a sea change in behavior needs to take place among young people.
This Delta variant seems to spread much more easily than the previous variants we've had. And it seems to be attacking even the younger generation, whom we didn't see attacked in the past two waves. It is quite vicious. This is a problem. Now, to the young people, I just want to say, you must get vaccinated. Don't listen to WhatsApp rumors and other things. You are now just as vulnerable as the older generation. Don't gather in political meetings. Don't be sent on unholy missions. Just stay at home. Sanitize, wash your hands, mask up.
Meanwhile, the Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association says the so-called Vuzu illegal parties where underage youngsters consume alcohol and engage in premarital sex should be reconsidered. Tembelane Duwe of BPRA weighs in.
The first point that people need to understand is that no one is immune from COVID-19. What we have been witnessing lately is that the younger generation is now contracting COVID-19. This new Delta variant doesn't choose. No age group is safe from the Delta variant. And most of the cases, you find that the youths are the ones who are a bit reckless. They conduct parties. They have a tendency of walking around the streets without putting on masks. They are the most mobile group. At the same time, they are the partying group in terms of attending illegal parties. So as a residents association, we would like to urge the younger generation, especially those who are of school going age, those of college age, must take care. They must mask up. They must stay at home.
Never say. COVID-19 restrictions that suspended in-person classes have left many youngsters restless and indulging in reckless behavior. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/voahealthchat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Ahmudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.